This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za. Learn something new and connect with like-minded contributors in health, wealth, and relationships. This is Power Lunch
with Bobby Molloy
on Power 98.7.
Imagine finding yourself in a police interrogation room, feeling overwhelmed, scared, and unsure of what to do. In such situations, it can be easy for doubts to creep in, even if you're innocent. Our memories aren't always as reliable as we'd like to think, especially when stress enters the picture. Under the weight of persistent questioning and the authority of law enforcement, some people may start to question their own innocence, leading them to admit to things they didn't do. But false confessions aren't just about memory and perception. They also involve complex social dynamics. Think about how you may react when faced with an authority figure and the desire for approval or the avoidance of conflict. It can be quite natural to want to please those in power, even if it means saying things that aren't true. Some individuals, due to their personalities or due to personal circumstances, might be more susceptible to this pressure, making them even more likely to confess falsely during interrogations. Interrogation tactics used by law enforcement can also play a significant role in eliciting false confessions. Hours of relentless questioning, promises of leniency, perhaps even deceptive tactics to coax a confession. This is all what is under the umbrella of false confession. So let's talk to therapist, researcher, and mental health communicator Nsamo Munga, who joins us for this very complicated conversation, and I'd love to talk to you as well on 0861 987 000. And Samu, welcome.
Thank you. Lovely to be here with you again.
Is it complicated?
It is actually very complicated.
Yeah.
It's a good place to start because for a lot of times, a lot of people think that when somebody makes a false confession, it's for some reasons that we think they are, but there may be so many other reasons that may be underpinning somebody's what we're calling false confession now. And perhaps it's also important to note right from the outset that a false confession is not necessarily a lie. Right? So there's a difference between a lie when somebody lies during an interrogation, for example, they know exactly that they are lying, right? Whereas what we are discussing today, which is a false confession, is not necessarily a lie. It's exactly as you preambled it.
So it's not a lie per se. It's under pressure, perhaps collating memories in a different way or saying things so that you yourself may get out of trouble.
Exactly. And looking at it from motivational psychology, right? So when somebody thinks about all our behaviors being motivated, they can be motivated for good. They can also be motivated for the negative. So the motivation for pleasure, for example, or the motivation for punishment, right? So either I'm motivated to avoid punishment as it is presented, or I'm motivated to get a reward. So in any case, it's for a reward or an avoidance of a presented and perceived punishment.
So I see here we're talking also about techniques like the Reed technique. And you'll know the Reed technique, it relies on psychological manipulation. How does that work? And do law enforcement utilize the Reed technique?
So there's a lot of discussion around soliciting confessions under duress, right? And this is why over a long period of time, first it was the use of specific torture methods as extractive techniques for getting confessions from victims or suspects, right? And there's increased scholarship that questions issues around even the techniques that seem very, very subtle in the exertion of pressure, they're still exerting pressure, right? For example, even when somebody, a police officer walks into the room and to carry out an investigation, if I know they are law enforcing agencies, that has an impact on how I feel.
Yeah.
It has an impact on how I see myself, even in that instance, right? Secondly, if they're walking into the room and they're carrying a gun.
They're armed, yeah.
Right? They're armed. Thirdly, if they're walking into the room in full regalia. So it's all these elements. They're performative elements. They have a function for the police, certainly, right, in their investigations. But the impact that has on a person who is a subject of that particular investigation is enormous.
The number to dial is 0861-987-000. Let's talk about it. False confessions and this really interesting, but it can be devastating, painting into a corner of suspects sometimes or you know, trying to elicit some sort of false confession out of a person and what that does to you. In the psychological over the time that it is happening. You can call in on 0861-987-000. You know, as I'm thinking about this, there are two other contexts that are coming into mind for me. The one is the school context.
Yeah.
And we've all been in that situation where all the grade nines must go to the hall because somebody did something.
Yep.
And we're going to take away your grade nine camp if we don't hear who did that thing. Or we're going to make sure that no grade nines get to have break time for the rest of the year. And so it goes with increasing consequences to try and elicit some sort of confession from somebody right?
Yeah.
And then the other context I think of in Samu is even in the home, parents with their children.
Yep.
To try and get an answer will keep loading on all of the potential consequences, the good cop, bad cop. I mean, you know, as parents, we're not dressed in cops' outfits, but that looming power that a parental figure has potentially has the same effect.
Absolutely. Developmentally. Children are born, and we know how children are born. They're very defenseless. They are small, tiny. They're extremely dependent. So they're dependent on these big, large, enormous figures around them. They're dependent on them 100%.
Yes.
Right. And when we're talking about the motivations for false confessions in certain instances, and even we could even say the motivations for lying, people lie generally, you know. Lots of people learn to lie for the same reasons as well, right? Children learn to lie when they are afraid that whatever incentives that are presented to them that are rightly connected with their needs, need for survival, need for goods and services that are only provided by their parents can be withdrawn, right? So right from the very outset, they begin to look for ways and ways for being on the right side of whatever issue that is arising. And now, they might not think of it as lying, but it's really just playing to the right side of having your needs met.
Yeah.
Right. So and under the circumstances, for some people, sadly, that becomes the imprint and the script with which they live most of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, so they lie, they duck and dive, they cheat, and it becomes part of how they navigate life. For some people, eventually they develop a strong enough conscience and they're like, no, I'm going to live my life out of a very strong ethic of inner authenticity, and that then they choose to take a different path. But under certain circumstances, under pressure, under the threat of withdrawal of certain incentives, a lot of people do falter.
Absolutely. I want you to grab your headphones. We've got a very interesting caller. Aubrey's called in on 0861-987-000. And Aubrey, you've had an interesting situation happen to you. Hi, Aubrey.
Hi, Ceci, and then hello to the guest.
We're listening.
Hi, Aubrey.
Yes. I once had an incident where I was working before. They called the lie detector, which was doing the test. Mm. So I failed the test for something that I didn't do. But when I questioned the guy when they gave me the result, I questioned the guy, asked him, "What? When you say I failed, I was guilty for something that I didn't do. What was the reason?" He told me, he explained about being under pressure when they were doing the test, and then my emotion. So from there, I was confused, but I didn't want to entertain on this question because I was confused because of I was losing my job by that time for something that I didn't do.
Mm.
So does it normally happen if it does occur, things like that?
Mm. So you,
that was my question,
underwent a lie detector test and you were found to be, you failed the lie detector test, but you hadn't done the thing. So that's a very interesting question, Aubrey. Yes, thank you very much. Your thoughts, Nsamu?
Yeah. So again, in the psychological world, and especially in the psycholegal field, there are lots of questions around the validity of the lie detectors, and considering all the issues that Aubrey has just raised, and what we have already discussed, that when somebody, it's like we're raising questions around intelligence tests and all these other tests, the IQ tests and whatever, raising questions around context. Right. And circumstances.
Yes.
Under which circumstances are you going to carry out this test? And there's a lot of study that has showed that in different circumstances, you get different results.
Mm.
So, yes, with that, Aubrey is right in being affected by the fact that the result came out that way for something that he did not do.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what are we saying?
So what we're saying here in essence is that context matters.
Okay.
Right. And it's exactly the issues that we're raising. Somebody would confess to have done something, and that's not the case with Aubrey. You know, he didn't confess. I think he stands that he did not do whatever. But in this case it was a lie detector that made an accusation of Aubrey having done that, and somebody may read into the lie detector as an objective result of a test, right? Without understanding all the consequential and contextual material that Aubrey may have been dealing with.
How does a lie detector test even work?
That's a good question.
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah,
because it says therapist, researcher, mental health communicator, not a member of the SAPS.
Exactly.
But I wonder, because can't some reactions physiologically look like something else? So if your heart is pounding, it could be because of anxiety, as you say, because of the whole circumstance.
Exactly.
Feeling intimidated, you know, you've never been in this place before. Maybe they've starved you, like whatever.
Yep.
And then the lie detector is a machine that's been programmed to pick up specific reactions and signals and programmed to say that signal will always mean this result. Yep. Whereas perhaps it doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the positivist arrangement with the lie detector, because it's fed. It's like we're talking about AI, right? Mm. AI is fed information of what is and what things should be, what it should look out for.
Yes.
Right. So
if you see this, it means this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But having said that, the lie detector itself does not make interpretation.
Yeah.
So it picks up the signals that it has been given. Right. And it's up to the person who is reading the result
to
interpret whatever the machine has presented, whatever results, because it's only picking whatever it has been told to pick.
Yeah, I've always thought that's a very strange thing.
Mm.
A very, very strange thing. Okay, so interrogation tactics, prolonged questioning, deception, all of those things play a role in contributing to false confessions. But can we talk about personality traits? Are there specific individuals who are more susceptible to false confessions?
There are people who are more susceptible to false confessions. Mm-hmm. As to whether they are personality traits or personalities, that's a different question, but certainly behavioral traits.
Okay.
So, for example, somebody who's got a history of offending, right? And they find themselves in a crowd, and an offense has been committed, right? And once the investigation begins, so there are two sources of pressure on that particular individual. One is from the social environment, because everyone else knows this person is an offender. He's got a history of offending. Right.
Got it.
So, secondly, they are also receiving the pressure from the investigators, because the investigators have a history of this particular person as offending.
Ah, okay. So he's almost, one of the first names on the list.
Yes. Mm. So, because any investigation begins with a particular premise, there's a theoretical framing, right? So this person is already seen as a potential offender.
Yeah.
Right? They themselves, because they know they have a history of offending, under the circumstances, they will begin to doubt their own role in whatever happened. And they might even begin to think, I'm not really sure anymore because, this has happened to me before. And under the circumstances, I'm probably the most likely person to have done this.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
very interesting.
Yeah. So when the investigations are going on and all these pressures are affecting the person, they are also processing this from their own frame of reference.
Yes.
They are thinking, I'm the one who is most likely to offend in this environment. Therefore, maybe with my experience, I might get some kind of leniency if I put my hand up.
Yes.
Secondly, I've got a history of offending. So if I don't confess now, I'm going to get
worse consequences
because I've got a history of offending. So all of that is happening in the mind of a person. Right.
So, I think about it in these cases and I'm sure it happened in South Africa a lot, but I can't think of anything right now. I think about cases of very, very young children who are black in America. And, some
100%.
Woman will have accused them of something and they'll just take the lower punishment by confessing to it, even though they didn't do anything.
Exactly.
And years and years later, that woman will come forward and say, nothing actually happened.
Yep.
It wasn't this young black child.
Yep.
And they've lost their lives.
And the person has served 25 years.
Lost their lives to jail.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's because of that context. Contextually, I know it is apartheid South Africa. I'm black. I'm not going to get away with.
Yes.
They're not going to listen to me. They've already judged me guilty.
Yes.
And so make that confession. So you're saying, of course, that still happens in different circumstances, different contexts.
It still does. Yeah. It's unfortunately it still happens.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the investigative and interrogative techniques haven't improved very much, to a point where they allow people enough space to really be themselves so that they can tell their story from their vantage point.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure that is exerted on people.
Let's speak about lie detector tests a little bit more. Justice is called in. Hi, Justice.
Hi, Fabio. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm very good. And good afternoon to your audience there and your guests there in studio.
Brilliant. Welcome.
Yes. I want to comment about the lie detector and also the victim side as well. The lie detector there, it detects the energy level of the victim there. And by that time, the victim might appear or might find himself or herself in a situation where maybe their blood level has been somehow elevated, and then that detector, it detects the energy level, understand? It doesn't simply say what it detects is a lie or it's not a lie, but it detects the energy level. Since we are, as a human beings, we are somehow electrified, we are wired, and we have got some electric connectivity in our body naturally. So the detector, it detects the energy level that it picks up on, that is coming from the human body, you understand? Mm. And then by that time, the victim might be maybe somehow scared or something like that, and then it might, the detector might interpret it some other way, you understand? And then yeah, that's how it works, you understand? But sometimes I think we shouldn't put 100% our trust on these things of machines, understand? Because a machine is something that we should do away with in terms of putting our trust, you understand? But it detects the energy level of the individual. You see, since we are connected electrically in our body, and then the person at that time might be scared or somehow, and then the results might be interpreted as the person has committed 1, 2, 3 whilst they haven't committed anything. But it was due to the blood. Yes, the blood being elevated at that time, you understand? So we need to educate the public on how this gadget works, you understand? So that, yes, we can save people from so many things that are being accused of while they haven't done anything wrong at that time, you understand?
We
so thank you, Bobby. Like, I love the conversation there. Keep it simple and, yes, yeah. Thank you so much, Bobby.
Thanks, Justice. Thank you very much for calling in. And I've got so many more who are speaking in a similar line to what Justice is saying on our Twitter, and we'll get to those after this. Your 1:30 Power Headlines.
Speak up. Call the Power Line on 0861-987-000.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you as we talk about the psychology of false confessions. Therapist, researcher, mental health communicator, and good friend to our show, Nzamumunga, is in studio with us talking about false confessions. And so far, we've spoken in the context of interrogations, in terms of, you know, trying to elicit some sort of confession when it comes to a crime. And the big question around lie detectors also just came up. Widumelo says, lie detectors are easy to bypass because they are very questionable. In most cases, the expert doesn't even explain how the system works. And the mediator and the employer just read a report and they don't know the system. A report can be adjusted to find guilt. Very interesting. And Musiwa says, this is the reason why lie detector tests are not admissible in court. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Have I been watching too many movies that I think, oh, yeah, I got him because of the lie detector. Moshe says, please ask Nsamo, what is the difference between an interview and an interrogation?
Very interesting question. So, yeah, so I think an interview can be an ordinary conversation or a want for information about a particular subject, whereas an interrogation is in pursuit of specific information. In the context of legal investigation, on justice investigation, it amounts to specific questions that are being asked to meet an end of arriving at a perpetrator or an offender. So it's very, very specific. So I usually don't call this an interview. I think you and I usually have a conversation on air. But, you know, if let's say you're speaking to somebody on something very specific, you're not interrogating them, you're giving them an interview so that they can say more about things that they know. Right. Whereas an interrogation then becomes a little more contextualized in soliciting for information that leads to something else.
Got it. I'm just thinking that there's sometimes, and I'm sure Munsu, you'll agree, there's sometimes you're just having a conversation with somebody and you'll sit back and go, is this an interrogation? Because, you know, we were chatting, you were asking me questions, but now it seems like there's a specific outcome that you're looking for and you're trying to paint me into that answer.
Yeah.
So you can feel the intent of an interrogation.
You can.
Yeah.
And you can actually feel the pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a voice note that's come through on 0833037093.
Hi, Bobby. Mandla here from Murrayfield. So I'd like to raise the term snitch. There's a snitch and there's booze that will cover you up. And in the two scenarios, and I know this sounds like a serious topic, but I'm going to make it a little bit laughable. There's a time when a friend of mine, his wife, called me. I didn't know the wife's number. Anyway, I answered the call. And then she asked me where the husband was, and her husband being my friend. I said, no, I was with him a couple of seconds ago. But I'll tell him to call you back once he's back. At that time, I hadn't seen him the whole day. And then I pursued to go find where the hell that guy is, so that I preempt a situation where you'd find that I may mess up his marriage if I said he was not with me. It almost sounded like he made me an excuse that he was with me. I don't know. Let's talk about that. But snitches, you know.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Mandla, I love how your mind works. It's just always such a great contribution. Yes, I think at some point we must have that conversation, because it's something that comes out often, right? The bro code, or check out how good your friend is. Exactly. You know, will they be able to get you out of this or that? But the idea of snitching is an interesting idea within the context of false confessions. Because snitching, I'm imagining in the context that in some way you get picked up by the cops and you have a crew that you've been operating with, and they want to know who the name of the head honcho is, and you are just not going to budge. Or you do. You snitch. You tell them. In order to save your life, you give up the name of the others.
Yeah, and back to what we were talking about earlier, the interrogative techniques and intent of that particular interrogation, what promises are being made to the person. So there are all those things happening at the same time.
Yes.
And if a person has been promised that, look, well, it doesn't happen very much here in South Africa within the legal framework that we have. Maybe it does, but certainly in the US, somebody can sign an agreement with the prosecutors that they are not going to be charged if they agree to give certain information.
Yeah.
If they work with law enforcement, right? So depending on what promises are made to you, right, and you want to save your skin. A lot of times people want to save their skin, and then they give up. And this is the challenge within the gang culture, for example, right? That is implanted in each of the members of the gang culture, that you're never going to be to snitch. They would rather get rid of a person like that than keep them in the gang, because they know that's the weakest link.
Yes.
Right. So it can be very dangerous in that sense. Yeah.
Absolutely. So do we know how prevalent false confessions are in the criminal justice system? What impact do they have on even wrongful convictions?
I don't know to what extent. I'll be quite curious to look at the criminological studies and see what the statistics are in terms of false confessions. Certainly there are people who are falsely accused and also forced to confess a crime they haven't committed by circumstance. In previous dispensations, there used to be what was called circumstantial evidence.
Yes.
Right? I don't think that works anymore. Somebody cannot just be accused because they happened to be on the street when something was happening, right? There has to be direct evidence of participation, either conspiring or planning or executing or whatever. Just because somebody is found on the site of where the crime was committed or offense was committed is not enough suggestion that they were part of the crime. So the whole question of how many people, that's a good question to sit with.
That would always be curious to find out.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we pivot into subsection A of our conversation? There's an element of false confession that comes in the form of individuals who simply confess to being a part of an illicit underworld, or who were at the scene of the crime, or who lived next door. Thabo Bester also DM'd me. You know, the person who wants to just get into the story no matter what. And we were talking about that as a team, that you know people like that. Everybody knows at least one person like that, you know. Oh, my flight was supposed to be the day before September 11th. Phew. And then, like, you know, you must be a part of the story. I mean, talk to us about the psychology of the person who always wants to insert themselves into a big narrative.
I suppose it's the human need to be relevant, right?
Yes.
We see it now when people play around with issues around news. You know, people want to be the first ones to break the news.
Ah, yes.
You know, people want to be the ones that took that video when whatever it is was happening, right? So I think it's a humorous desire to want to be relevant based on what is going on. And in times of very, very limited and minute consequences, it can be a game that people can just laugh off. Right, except that sometimes what can appear to be of minimal consequences can have incredible consequences, where the lie then has to be supported. Right, in an event, you're talking off air about somebody who just makes up a story about their life circumstance in the hope that they're going to put a GoFundMe page or whatever it is, you know, just to solicit pity.
I read the story
of
a woman who, in quotation marks, had cancer, goes through the motions, then falls pregnant, and then finds this church that prays for her. And now everyone's concerned, because when you have a baby, the hormones shift and it can accelerate the cancer. Then she gets cured of the cancer by this church and the laying of hands and, you know, fire, rush, blah, blah, blah. And then now her scam is up, the jig is up. So now she reinvents it, the cancer comes back, and she goes on this whole thing, and she starts speaking at this church, and she gets money from this church, until eventually people are like, the medication that she's taking, and she's telling everybody about the medication, is not a medication that you can inject yourself in the bathroom at your house. So that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Secondly, the kind of cancer that you have doesn't manifest in A, B, C. So people start super sleuthing around it, and eventually she gets found out. So exactly those types of stories, which I believe we're seeing much more and more and more. Yes, we're probably seeing them more because of the prevalence of social media. There's more of a spotlight. But those people, it's a fascinating psychology.
It is a fascinating case to look at,
because
exactly it's one has to ask questions around the incentives, where the incentive lies, right? So when somebody does that kind of thing for notoriety, right? The incentive is, well, I'm going to get following. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people have put on social media that one would say, really? You could just post that on there? Like, what's the end game here? What's the end game? So there are those kind of people that have, and the end game is to generate a lot of following. And of course, there's the social economy to all of this.
So you're saying it's on a continuum.
Yes.
We're all pretty much doing it to a degree.
Yes.
But those people are on some of the higher levels.
They're just motivated by so much that some of us can only admire.
Why can some people lie, make falsehoods, accuse, and sleep fine at night? And some people just can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So where we started the conversation, when we think about a person who used lies and confabulations, who told outright lies to get their needs met,
yeah,
to get an incentive, to get that tablet, mm, or to get that, well, what are these video games, yes, or whatever, yes, they are called now, yeah, right? So if somebody lied and then that was reinforced by receiving the incentive that they were lying for, then it becomes a pattern, how they get their needs met. And then people lie in politics, people lie in multiple spaces, people lie on their resumes and their CVs. And, you know, so the question is always, why is this person having to tell this lie? What is the end game? What is the incentive on the other end of this lie?
It's always worked.
Yeah.
Or it's something that they were taught would work.
Exactly.
Until
they are caught. And when they are caught, yeah, they will be like, well, why did you catch me? You know, don't you trust me? Don't, you know, they'll be screaming and kicking and shouting.
Why did you catch me? Yeah, is the know? Devil's work. Really.
Yeah. you are umlo iwena, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. So. And some of that is very, very funny. And that's what happens, right?
Yeah.
I feel harassed because you investigated me.
Exactly. Yeah. Why?
Ever the victim. All right, Stembiso, you're on the line with us. Hi, Stembiso.
Hi, Stembiso. Yeah, hi, Patrick.
I can also be Stembiso.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's lovely to have you with us. Go ahead.
I love these Tuesday conversations so much. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. Yes.
Now, the confessions, it's a comment and a question.
Mm.
I've heard, and maybe to some degree observed, you know, that because of confessions people make, you know, to their religious leaders, spiritual leaders, the priest, you know, the Koko Sangoma and the Baba Sangoma, they tell them, you know, the details of their secrets and their vulnerabilities, then that gives power, you know, of these people over the congregants or patients or whatever else. And because of this, it then becomes very difficult to hold them accountable institutionally. And also, you know, they kind of go further to exploit these people, you know, be it sexual, monetary, and also emotionally, because, you know, the confessions, they have the confessions, their confessions as weapons now.
Wow.
I mean, is that true? How does one deal with those?
Mm, that is fascinating. Mm. And if you think about a gang, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
I've got your deepest, darkest secrets because we've all now, we're functioning under this premise that mm-hmm. you have to come to me to cleanse your soul. So I've got to hold your deepest, darkest secrets.
Yeah.
And now I can do anything. I can blackmail you.
Yeah.
I can extort money from you. Mm-hmm. Stembiso, that is a great question.
Mm-hmm.
And Samuel?
And that's why we all need to guard against, one, we have the Poppy Act now, right?
Yeah.
That's not in a vacuum. Right, so we think that it's just for personal identification messages and information, but yes, that and also just the information, our own life stories have to be held with a lot of care.
Mm.
We must hold our life stories with a lot of care. Not everyone is supposed to have access to our stories, whether that person is a religious leader, whether that person is a traditional leader, or whatever capacity the person is acting in. You know, they have to earn the right to my story.
Yeah.
They have to earn the right to my story. Not once, they have to show. They have to show over an extended period of time that they are deserving of my story.
Mm.
And this is why in the context of therapy, for example, we're protected by ethical code of conduct.
Uh-huh.
So somebody then would at least be would be feeling quite safe that I'm going to see a person who, under these circumstances, is really going to hold my story as sacred and protect it. Mm-hmm. They're not going to use that story for any form of
exploitation. Yeah. Very interesting there. Levi, you're on the line. Is it Levi or Levy?
Any word that you can say, it's fine.
Hello, brother. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, and you?
I'm good, thanks. Go ahead.
Yes, you guys, it's false accusations and lie detector and all that we are discussing.
Yeah.
I've heard you guys mention something so crucial.
Mm.
Let's say, for instance, this one is being based on insurance companies.
Mm.
Let's say you buy alcohol using your car earlier on, and then it happens that later on you are involved in an accident. You may not, even at particular time, not even be a drinking type of person. You may have been buying it for somebody else.
Mm.
And then you find that your claim will be rejected due to the fact that you were within a precinct or a certain area that sells alcohol, or you purchased alcohol using your claim. I've heard it. They said it happens. I haven't experienced it.
Yeah, is that true? I've also heard lots of people
but
say.
But that would be an unfair conclusion,
mm-hmm.
because we need to work on a data that is more of proof,
yes.
than speculations. And we're paying a lot of money. Me on my own that I'm driving right now, I'm paying 3,000 rand.
For what? Insurance.
For
insurance.
Yes, for insurance.
Mm,
and now they come and say they don't pay my claim.
Yeah.
That would be so unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Got you, Levi. Thank you. Yeah, no. And I mean, you could be walking into the bottle store to buy cigarettes.
Yep.
To buy Simba chips.
Yep.
Anything's possible.
And that's the context that we were talking about,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. So, mm. You know, I do think we must delve into that. I think we have actually, Fano, haven't we? Fano's on the phone answering other callers. We must think carefully. We've talked about insurance claims and what can happen or not happen that your insurance company rejects a claim. I do remember talking about that at some point. But yeah, that's a very, very good point. All right. We've come to the end of our conversation. No, we haven't. Look at the time. I thought it was my dyslexia's kicked in. I thought that 4 was a 9. I can't believe it. So 0861 987 000. You're more than welcome to call in as we continue with these conversations around false confessions on Power Lunch on Power 98.7. You know, I want to delve a little bit more into this idea of people wanting to kind of get in on big news stories.
Mm. Mm.
And we spoke recently after that precious young girl, Jocelyn Smith, was kidnapped. And now it's been months since she's been gone.
Mm.
And one of the investigators spoke to us and said, when it comes to missing children and missing persons, the fewer instances there are of people coming forward and saying that they have information when they actually don't, the better.
Yeah.
Because it actually can mess up the investigation.
Yeah.
So talk to me about that. That you think that you're actually, it's actually a little bit of a selfish act, isn't it? To want to just insert yourself in every story.
Yeah. It's the whole thing of wanting to be in the center of a story.
Mm.
You know, I want to be in the center of everything that is going on. It can speak to some deficiencies. It can speak to some people's deficiencies around self-esteem, self-value, and the value that they hold for themselves in the context of their life world, or where they live, who they share their life with. And if a person does not feel satisfied within themselves, then they want to get validation from whatever means they can. And one of those ways of getting validation is to insert themselves in stories they really should not be. And it's true, the fewer people come up when there's an investigation going on, the better. Because then the investigators can concentrate on real and potential leads.
Mm.
Otherwise, they'll have hundreds of leads and each of those leads are going nowhere.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
And then it just complicates the investigation altogether.
Yeah. And the split of the resources.
Yes,
and it's an issue.
It's very costly.
So should we be blocking our friends who are constantly trying to put themselves in situations and stories, the false confessors?
Yeah, I know people that are the hero of every story, even at an ordinary dinner table.
Yes.
Right? When the moment you start telling a story about what happened to yourself, to you, on the other end, they will come up. It's always this kind of one-upmanship. They will come up with a bigger and better story.
Yeah.
Right. So the moment
you broke your leg.
Exactly.
I broke both my legs.
Both my legs.
Yeah.
Right. So they want to be, it's a way of wanting to be in the middle of that story.
Yeah.
And when you follow it up, you might actually discover that the story they're telling has no basis in facts whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's functional. It's performative. Mm. It's meant to capture the attention of whatever platform they are having at that particular time.
And so it really is quite helpful when you think about it in the context of when we were right at the beginning of the conversation. What has always worked for this person?
Yes.
Perhaps as a child, this has always worked to, you know, have grandiose stories, to lie to get their way. And there's a bit of a compassion that you can give to somebody
Absolutely.
Who's that kind of perpetual person who lies. But it doesn't mean that you have to keep them around. It doesn't mean that you have to put yourself in harm's way.
Mm.
But you can have that real sense of understanding where that comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then, talking from a false confessions point of view, from the justice and legal system point of view, I think this has been a fascinating conversation, as always. Thank you for being here. Is it the right time? Can you just confirm for me if I'm looking at the correct time? It is.
Yeah, it is.
this time is the right time. Nsamo Moonga, therapist, researcher, and mental health communicator, thank you very much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Bobby.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.